Welcome to the GenCast Network. Created every Thursday, GenCasts will feature the latest biotech news of the week, in addition to compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. In this week's GenCast, Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling interviews G. Stephen Burl of Burl & Company about outsourcing biotech and life science research and manufacturing to India and China. But first, the news of the week with Rob Reese.
This is Rob Reese for Gen. Scientists from the University of Michigan report that they have discovered a way to differentiate leukemic stem cells from normal adult blood stem cells, as well as a way to destroy the cancer stem cells and not the normal ones. This, according to Sean J. Morrison, PhD, lead author on the study. The paper appears in the April 6, 2006 edition of Nature. Cirna Therapeutics was just issued a U.S. patent that is reportedly the first siRNA target patent issued in the United States. Although the patent covers any chemically modified siRNA targeting a specific gene, the claims of the patent are not limited to a specific siRNA sequence, but cover any sequence used against the gene. In addition, the claims of this patent are not limited to a specific type of chemical modification or structure, but cover any chemical modification that can be made to the siRNA. According to Howard W. Robin, president and CEO of Cirna Therapeutics, the issuance of this patent changes the intellectual property landscape in the field of RNAi. In the 20th anniversary edition of Beyond Borders, the Global Biotechnology Report 2006, Ernst & Young reports that the revenues of publicly traded biotechnology companies surpassed $60 billion for the first time in the sector's 30-year history. The global biotechnology industry's revenues are growing at strong rates, product approvals are bringing innovative drugs to market, and the long elusive goal of profitability is quickly approaching, said Ernst & Young's Don Zaro, leader of the global biotechnology and pharmaceutical sectors. BioWisdom acquired the bioinformatics business of Lion Bioscience, which is based around the SRS suite of data integration products. In accordance with the agreement, BioWisdom will purchase the shares of Lion Bioscience and its subsidiary, Lion Bioscience Asset Vehicle, for total consideration of up to €4 million. Scott K. Lyons, Ph.D., Xenogen's senior scientist, says there is a pressing need to develop better treatments for pancreatic cancer because of its clinical challenges and poor prognosis. Xenogen researchers successfully imaged the spontaneous development of bioluminescent tumors in the pancreas and bladder of mice using the company's optical imaging technologies. The company believes these findings further validate the role of their in vivo optical imaging systems, tumor cell lines, and transgenic mouse models in cancer research. Microsoft formed the BioIT Alliance, a cross-industry group that will focus on further integrating science and technology with the goal of making personalized medicine a reality. The alliance brings together companies from the pharmaceutical, biotech, hardware, and software industries to explore new ways to share complex biomedical data and collaborate among multidisciplinary teams to ultimately speed the pace of drug discovery and development. Microsoft Chairman Bill Gates is confident the alliance will play an important role in the development of solutions that transform today's data into knowledge and improve the quality of millions of lives. The Dutch-funded Potato Genome Sequencing Consortium will soon start sequencing of the first potato chromosome. Dutch researchers, working together with a worldwide group of research organizations from 16 different countries, aim to complete the sequencing of the potato genome by the end of 2010. The unraveling of the genome will enable potato growers and the processing industry to make better use of the potato's genetic potential. Such improvements would have global implications, as the potato is the world's fourth most important crop. Encore Genetics and Viagen reported the birth of Royal Blue Boon II, clone of Royal Blue Boon, a leading international producer of cutting horse champions, which company representatives believe was the first commercially cloned mare. At 26, the mare is seeing the end of her long and prosperous career, and her reproductive days are well behind her. The companies also anticipate the arrival of 6 additional well-known horse clones this year. This is Rob Reese for Gen.
In-depth coverage of the news of the week can be found on www.genengnews.com. Just click on the Sticky Ends Online link. And now, John Sterling interviews G. Stephen Burl, who runs Burl & Company, about outsourcing biotech and life science research and manufacturing to India and China.
Steve Burl is actually a household name among those working in biotechnology. He's been involved in the biotech industry for over 35 years. Currently, Steve serves as the CEO of a Burl & Company. It's a San Francisco-based merchant bank focused on biotechnology and life sciences. Before next week's bio conference in Chicago, Burl & Company will be holding two life science partnering meetings, one covering China and the other on India. We thought this would be a good time to ask Steve the following question. Why are so many biotech companies seriously looking at China and India as outsourcing locations for drug discovery, product development, and manufacturing?
Two different things. First, the large populations and the size of those markets. Each of those countries is 1.2 billion people or so, rapidly building infrastructure, increasingly rich, spending significant amount of their GDP on healthcare and other items, and they represent attractive markets for American, European, and non-China and India places for companies to get excited about. The flip side of that is that both of those countries represent economic structures where you can get discovery, development, people, even manufacturing people, at perhaps as little as one-tenth of the cost of those same people in the U.S. and Europe. If you look at most FTE costs for American European companies, you're talking about roughly $300,000 per FTE. Those same people are probably available in those two countries at $25,000 or $30,000 per FTE. So in a capital-dependent industry, if you can get the same postdoc who used to work at Lilly, Pfizer, or Merck, that he's now working for XYZ over in India and China, one-tenth of the cost, that can be fairly attractive.
I see. Now, you see more and more articles on China and India and doing business in these places. What I'd like to talk about are, one, what are the main advantages of doing biotech in China? And then, secondly, what are the main advantages of doing business in a place like India? So why don't we take China first?
Well, so both of them have world-class science, that is to say, Western, U.S., European-educated people that have frequently been significant players in major companies around the world who have returned to those places in both China and India and are operating on that basis. Obviously, China has a little bit of a disadvantage in that English isn't the dominant language, may have a little bit of a disadvantage in a lack of a convertible currency, and may have a little bit of a disadvantage in the IP enforcement that caused more companies to perhaps feel more comfortable doing business in India, where the IP may be more protectable, the language is more common, and the infrastructure similar, but certainly China has a lower cost, smart, competent people, very creative environment, and an attractive opportunity to leverage, if you will, what you're doing in other parts of the world with things that you can do in China. I would argue India is very similar in that regard. Quite frankly, there's a Chinese diaspora and there's an Indian diaspora, and some people are more attracted to one group than the other. Most companies, as you noted, in the U.S. and Europe are asking themselves, what should we be doing in Chindia, and then trying to differentiate other pros and cons in India versus China.
Now, what about the scientific infrastructure in each country? How would you describe each?
I would say they are maybe different in some subsets of science, but broadly speaking, they're at a peer level with those colleagues in the U.S. and Europe. They are generally, the scientific infrastructure is well-educated people, by and large educated elsewhere, that have returned. What we don't have yet in either country is the kind of spending, particularly that we see in the U.S., from an NIH-like institution, so you don't have much core research being done there that we do here. On the basic sciences, you have a lot more of the applied technology. I think the other thing to recognize when you look at a place like India is that they already have a very established generics manufacturing business. The Dr. Reddy's and Ranbaxy's and others are major players on a world basis and have been for some time selling generic products. We are increasingly going to a pro-generics world. in which some of the competitive advantages that those companies have, some of the experiences that those companies have, will play well for them on a global scale. We've seen less of that historically in China. The Indians are certainly more dominant players in the world today than the Chinese are on the generic side. But quite frankly, if you'd have said to me 5 years ago that the largest PC maker in the United States was going to be Chinese, you probably would have been laughed out of the room. Didn't take people very long to get comfortable that Lenovo, which is a Chinese company, is the dominant player in the U.S. today. And so people may think we're nuts when we talk about major Chinese companies being global players in 5 years, but we're likely to see some of that.
I see. Now, you mentioned lack of NIH-level spending in both of these countries, which I guess could be considered a disadvantage. Are there any other disadvantages of doing biotech in China or India?
Well, I think the IP issues are more substantive in China. It isn't that they don't respect IP. The question is whether they enforce it. And I think a lot of Western companies are uncomfortable that their IP will be as protected in China as they believe it is in India. And so some of the activities, more service-related activities, where they feel there may be less IP risk. Secondly, in China, there's some currency conversion issues. You can, in some cases, create a lot of value in China, but you can't necessarily monetize it in Western currency. And so China has at least two disadvantages, one being currency convertibility and the other being IP, that aren't generally prevalent in doing business in India.
I see. Now, before a company, and many companies are now thinking about outsourcing some of their biotech activities to either China or India, what factors need to be kept in mind in order to optimize the chance that the company is making the right decision?
Well, first of all, cost is only one of many items. You can get pretty romance with the fact that you can get really talented people at one-tenth of the cost. But you're also dealing with people in other cultures. You're dealing with people in other legal structures, as I said, other currency structures, and you're dealing with people halfway around the world. So maybe the all-in cost isn't a savings of tenfold. Maybe it's fivefold or threefold or sevenfold. But it isn't dollar for dollar because you're operating with resources a long way away in a somewhat foreign environment. So I think one needs to look at how they're going to manage that, what the real kind of net-net savings are. There's obviously savings not just in dollars, but maybe in time. Access to patients, if you're doing clinical trials, are there populations of patients that are treatment naive that can be relatively quickly accessed? And that may be different depending on what particular clinical trial you're doing or what patient population you're doing. India has a very, very large number of FDA-approved plants already operating. China doesn't have as many. So it may be that if FDA compliance is an important part of it, that there are resources already in place that are more accessible in one country than the other. And quite frankly, the kinds of people that you can get, the chemistry that you may have, the experiences or relationships that you may have, may also have a lot to do with where it is better to do outsourcing. So whether you're outsourcing accounts payable processing or outsourcing clinical development or preclinical development or outsourcing manufacturers, I think the issues that you would use, whether you're outsourcing it to Russia, Brazil, China, India, or to a company across the street, are very much the same. The answers to some of the pros and cons are different, but the issues are very much the same.
Very good. Hey, Steve, I want to thank you for your time. As I said, we're going to post this week, and best of luck with your seminars next week just before bio.
Thank you, John. Hope to see you there.
Well, take care.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, be sure to visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghaus, saying thanks for joining us, and be sure to tune in next Thursday.